Blog Talk Radio.
Here in Staten Island, New York City. A little bit of a late night edition here. So I'm only going for about 45 minutes. Well, 43 now. So just wanted to do an abbreviated show. Obviously, not a lot happening right now. Big news of the day is the same thing that seems to be repeating itself, kind of like how my day seems to repeat. It's basically like a bad version of Groundhog Day, where Bill Murray's character Phil has to keep waking up to "I Got You, Babe" at 6 o'clock in the morning and smashing his clock, and it still rings as an alarm clock. Baseball continues to implode, and also explode, maybe literally, or implode literally. Right now, I think most people are just disillusioned with the stance that Major League Baseball has taken. And when it comes to the owners, and when it comes to the worst commissioner in sports and in baseball history, Rob Manfred, there really isn't much to say. It just doesn't speak to much when it comes to him. When the players basically handed him back the other night and said, we're turning down your proposal. What was it, like 70% for prorated, for a prorated season of what? I forget. 48, 50 games, whatever it was. But whatever it was. Well, as expected, they turned it down. And they then announced, you know, now we'll just wait for you guys to make the next move and you guys can mandate a season, whether it's 48 games, 54 games, whatever. So they put the onus on the owner side, and especially Rob Manfred, and he's just an awful, awful person to represent Major League Baseball, and he is awful in every which way, and he said that he's not confident that there will be a 2020 baseball season, and that as long as there's no dialogue with the Players Association, that real risk is going to continue. This was a report from ESPN's Jeff Passan, former reporter for Yahoo. And I also listened to an interview with Bob Clappish earlier yesterday on Moose and Maggie, and that was not positive either. And I just think when you look at it, I don't think there's going to be baseball this season. And I don't know when baseball is actually going to return because of the CBA going to be expiring very soon. I mean, we could be looking at a long time without baseball. So I just think that this whole thing, you have to put it where it belongs. That Rob Manfred, who has just been awful in every aspect, and the owners, I don't think they've negotiated or bargained in good faith. They try to put the onus on the players, you know, that they're not having good faith negotiations. Oh, really? You know, maybe if you came up, if you had come up to 85% or 90% prorated, instead of being cheapskates, then the onus could have been on the players. That's something I think I touched on the other night. So instead, we have this just this double talk from this just fraud. I mean, the only person worse than him is probably Mayor de Blasio. I call him de Blasio. He continues to just destroy New York City. So I guess it makes me happy that I'm in Staten Island and I'm not in Manhattan or any other borough, but especially Manhattan. But be that as it may, I mean, it's just really disappointing, and it just leaves you blank. Like, yeah, I remember about that 1994 strike, and that was because of Donald Fehr on August 12th that things ended. And then the baseball decided to cancel, postpone games, and eventually canceled the rest of the season. And a really potential great season went up in smoke. Yeah. And it was just awful. It lasted a while, too. So, yeah, I mean, this is a disaster. So, he talks about it being a disaster for the game. Well, whose fault is it? Really, the players? Or maybe it's the owner side with you, you idiot, Manfred. Because you're not thinking about the fans, and you're not thinking about, I don't think you want to play. That's what I think. I really think that they don't want to play. That's what I think. He says that they're 100% committed to getting baseball back on the field. That's baloney. Really. Tony Clark, the MLBPA rep. He's not the most popular guy out there. He's a good player. Good first baseman for the Tigers. Play with the Yankees a little bit. Players are disgusted that after Rob Manfred unequivocally told players, fans, it would 100% be a 2020 season. He did say that. He basically said that because they can basically mandate it. He decided to go back on his word, as now threatening to cancel the entire season. So I'm not going to even get into more details because there's no reason to. This is about Major League Baseball trying to screw over the fans and the players. And it just gets uglier by the day, by the hour, by the minute. And that's what it's about. So there's no baseball, there's no baseball. I already am on record saying that if they really mandated a 50-game season, 48-game season, I wouldn't care. That's not baseball to me. That's not a baseball season. I mean, they did propose 72 games, MLB, but the 70% of players' prorated salaries, maximum will be 83%. And that's if they played played that 72-game season and had full playoffs, it would get bumped up. Here's the thing. MLB just got like a huge contract, the owners did, from Turner Sports, like $1 billion, I think, right? They're not exactly hurting for money. So when they say that when they're trying to just lowball, and I'm not saying they have to do the full prorated thing, but if they were just willing to bend a little bit, you could have a season. And to me, it's not even a season. So 72 games proposal, and they could mandate a 50-game season or 54-game season if they wanted to. The players would need 3 weeks of spring training. So let's say they reach an agreement in a week. Well, it's today. June the 16th? Yeah, it's June 16th already. So if they reached agreement, say, next, by the weekend, okay? If the players would have to have a training camp, a spring training, or whatever. And what does that mean exactly? Well, it means they wouldn't really start until almost the end of July. I mean, yeah, till like maybe the fourth week of July. Does that make a lot of sense to you? So you'd have August, have a little bit at the end of July, maybe 5 or 6, 7 days of July, all of August, and September. Yeah, I mean, really, it's not much of a season, if you ask me. They'd be going up against the NHL. not that baseball cares about that, but the NHL is going to have their very interesting Stanley Cup extended playoff. That's what I'm just going to call it, extended playoff tournament. But that's what it really is, especially when you add the extra 8 teams, and the only 7 teams are excluded from it, and they're in the first part of the lottery. Teams that I've mentioned before, like the Sabres, the Ottawa Senators, the Detroit Red Wings, the Devils, the Ducks, the Kings would have been, but Ottawa has their pick, I think. Aren't the Kings in it? I'm thinking of the Sharks. Okay, so whatever. I guess what I'm saying is, at least the NHL looks like they're going to play. The NBA is a little more sketchy because it seems like these players, you know, they're trying to find reasons not to play. Some of them. At least some of them. And guys like Kyrie Irving, they want to fight for justice for Black Lives Matter and for African Americans that were killed by cops. They want to fight for that. They want to fight for that cause, social justice. I think it's a two-way street. I've said this before. Look. There are cops that are bad. There are. And these incidents shouldn't happen, but there's too many of them. I think what happened to the guy in Atlanta, I think that he had a criminal record. He decided to steal a taser from a cop. So the cop probably feared for his life or felt like he was in danger. And they decided, and this guy decided to fire the taser. And the cop shot him dead. And this one's not a good guy. So I don't want to hear people turning this guy into some kind of like martyr. That's what they do. He wasn't. And he put himself at risk by doing that all-out stuff. You don't do that, especially if you already had a history. They don't want to talk about, you know, look, they want to fight for justice, fine. I'm not arguing off that. But how about they could educate themselves a lot by looking at some of the quote-unquote black-on-black crime that we see. Or the cops that have also been fired at or shot or killed for no reason. Or the percentage of African Americans that are in jails. I've read all of this stuff. I was just educating myself. I'm not trying to take a side here. I'm not picking a side. I'm trying to just lay it all out there for everybody. That's all. That's all I'm going to say about it. I don't want to turn this into a political show. I just wanted to just make some points. If I had a chance to play basketball in Orlando and Disney World and, you know, maybe be part of a tournament and basketball playoffs, 22 teams, and play for a championship and go to a Disney World and play, even with some of the restrictions, and which players don't like, well, that's too bad. I'd be there. I'm there. That's not going to affect LeBron James. I might call him a fraud, but he wants to play. You know why he wants to play? Because he knows that he's getting older, too. He is older now. He is. And it's 35. And he knows this is a great opportunity for the Lakers to win a championship, for him to help cement his legacy and win a championship. And the same year that Kobe Bryant died in a plane crash with his daughter and with just too many victims in a helicopter crash, excuse me. And it's just sad. The whole thing is sad. And that feels like it happened last year or 2 years ago. When you think about all the stuff that's happened with coronavirus, COVID-19 pandemic, all the people that have suffered, people that have perished. And now all the protests. It's your right to protest. I'm not taking anything away from that. People want to go and protest. Just do it peacefully. Don't riot, don't loot stores, don't destroy property. That's not what it should be about. It's pretty scary, to be honest, especially when you get some of those extreme groups in there, funded by George Soros and others. Notice I'm not putting any emotion into this. I'm just speaking very eloquently. I can't even pronounce it. Eloquently. I'm very eloquent about this. I'm not trying to stir anything here. I'm just speaking truth. You know, I was reading something very interesting before about abortion. I read that like 47% of African American moms get abortions. It's a lot. It was a good blog. Someone that I follow, and she really is a great writer, and she lives in the city. And, yeah, I mean, it was really interesting. They don't talk about that, though. They can't talk about that. I think those lives matter, too. I'm not saying I'm against choice. It is a woman's right to decide whether or not to have an abortion, but that's a pretty high percentage. So that's what I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say about it. And in terms of baseball, what is there to say, really? It's disappointing, and it sucks, and there's probably not going to be a baseball season. And if they had 50 games or 48 games and they did reach agreement, why should I care? Why should I care? It's not going to be here. It's going to be in whether it's Florida or Arizona or wherever the hell they play. There's not going to be fans. You still have to worry about the pandemic, even though people think they could just go out and do whatever they want, like these idiots in Manhattan that decided to just hang out in St. Mark's Place and drink and think that they're safe when they're not safe. Been flattened. There could be a second wave. And if you want to hang around people, guess what's going to happen? You don't wear masks? Guess what's going to happen? Oh, it's going to go back up. The case will go back up like it did in Florida and I think it was Arizona. Or no, Texas, Florida, and Texas, two very hot spots, and that's the worrisome part, especially when it gets hot out in the summer. And you still have to wear your mask when you go into public places. You still have to social distance. You want to not wear a mask? Social distance, don't. But if you're in a crowd, and you know you're on top of each other, you're not social distancing. Well, I don't think you got a choice. They don't want there to be a season. Okay, whatever. Screw them. Because I don't care. I don't care, okay? Trevor Bauer had some interesting tweets. He's always very interesting to follow. June 15th. So how do you delay another 13 days on his Twitter account, Bauer outage? He's always very outgoing. He's an interesting guy. Threatened to cancel the season. Threatened arbitration. Threatened grievances. All the while, hold the fans for ransom. Hold the future of the game for ransom. No one believes your bluff, Bud. And he's not talking about Bud Selig either. You're holding a losing hand. Unfortunately, it's a losing hand for everyone involved. Not just you. There's some saying out there about not killing the goose that lays the golden eggs. Check it out on the old Google machine. It's worth knowing. That is Trevor Bauer yesterday. Yeah. And he's right. I saw Syndergaard. He posted something interesting too about the baseball season basically being. He I think he put up a lot of those memes. I'm not really a big fan of those, but okay. 1994. All right, that was a different time. It was a different period. So, what do I want to say about 1994? When I come back, I'll let you know. We will be right back. After this. Half of the great Nine Inch Nails Hurt. It is D-Flex taking you until, God, I don't even know, I guess 2:15. Yeah, I guess so. So, yeah, like I said, this is not going to be a long show. Let's look at the 94 strike. That was a lot different. That was really Donald Fear's responsibility. He was the bad guy in that. And you know what I think about it? God, I don't even know why that happened. They're so caught up in just getting a new agreement that they cost themselves a potential great season in 1994. A year where the Yankees were in first place with the 70 wins and the 43 losses. And the Montreal Expos were the best team in the and the majors, yeah. Yeah, they had a loaded roster. of guys like Larry Walker, Marquis Grissom. Marquis Grissom was very underrated, underappreciated, a guy that he hopped up on quite a few teams. The Braves, it was with them. The Indians. He was not what you would call a great leadoff hitter, but he had speed. He stole home to win a game for the Indians in a series, I think, against the Orioles. Yeah. 1997, maybe, or 98. Yeah, one of those 2 years. I think it was 98, actually. Maybe the AL Division Series or something like that. He's just a real underrated player. Moises Alou was always a really good player, an all-star caliber player. They're trying to go around the horn is pretty tough. It is. But Pedro Martinez, who they stole from the lineup, the Shields, because the Dodgers didn't think Pedro was big enough to be a starter. Boy, were they wrong about that. And Delino didn't turn out to be so good for them. And Delino was a good player, but it just didn't work out. Chris Knappholz, effective lefty. You had Wetland doing the closing, and I think Rojas was the setup guy. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they were just really good overall. Sean Barry was third baseman. Whenever I think about that team, it's always a little bit tough to remember everybody. But they looked like a team that was going to win it all. And unfortunately, that season got canceled. The Expos never recovered from it. And well, are they gone? They were gone like a decade later. Lost their team, went to Washington. And the Nationals just won a World Series last year. Well, it feels like it was a lot longer ago when you think about things. Everything bounced right for them. And, it was an exciting October. And now it's like you can't even remember anything. I remember Matt Williams with his 43 home runs. I remember going to a Mets-Giants game. It became the longest rain delay at the moment. Went with some of my old friends and drove there. The sky turned pitch black in the middle of the game. At that point, I think Barry Bonds had gone yard. Matt Williams, I think, had a couple of home runs. It was a very interesting game at Shea Stadium, Giants and Mets. And wow. Wow, and then it's just pitch black, and we're sitting way up. And the old those old stadiums, you're sitting way up in right field, kind of right field, upper deck. And all of a sudden, it just started coming down. We all had T-shirts on it summer, and we got drenched because the rain came right through like the cracks. So you weren't really protected, even though you were all the way up. And got drenched. They gave away beach towels. They actually finished the game. I mean, this was like a 2.5 hour rain delay. I could look it up. I could look it up. I mean, I got nothing else better to do. I mean, that was an amazing game. Yeah. That's Giants. Rain delay game. Let's see if we could actually find it. See if I can find. Ah, here we are. Rain won't go away during a 7 hour Mets day. The first thing that comes up. On that July 23rd, 1994. Yeah, so basically there was about a little more than 2.5 weeks, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks left of your baseball season. It was 7 hours. The game lasted 7 hours because of the rain. So New York Times article. Let's just see if this actually pops up. Might not. Let's see here. I can check. Oh, you got some old pictures. Okay. This is a digitized version. Usually you go to a game, you know, this was a 1:40 start. Yeah, you get out between 4 and 5. So you get out maybe 4:30 and you're up. So the game itself was delayed by 26 minutes of rain at first. So there was a 20, so almost a half an hour you had to wait. And then in the fifth inning, I said it was like the middle of the game. So that's what, 2-1. And it just came in buckets. It was a lot longer than I thought. I forgot. This was a 3-hour and 39-minute rain delay. 3 hours and 39 minutes long. A game that the Giants won by a score of 4-2. Matt Williams hit a drive to left. I remember that. It was 36th. And Barry Bonds hit a shot to right for his 31st. At that moment, Bonds had hit 8 home runs in 8 games. So they did not want to play a doubleheader. It was very hot and humid that day, 87 and humid, and seemingly 187. Yeah, that's how it felt. The umpires wanted to play the game. But if that was today, they wouldn't have played. They would have froze it. You know who made the last out for the Mets? If I was to be on the whole thing, Jeff Kent. Wound up, and where he wound up doing his best damage with the Giants after being traded from Al Williams. Go figure. Yeah, I am really shocked that they played that long. It's really shocking that they played such a long game. 3.5 hour rain delay. And they played. Man, that was a great, you know, I had that beach top for a long time. Yeah, I mean, that was fun. I don't even know what happened to it. I got lost one day. This was back when I worked at the JCC. And you could even find the box for this game, obviously, on the baseball reference site. Darren Lewis played center field. Oh, my God. Look at somebody's name. Darryl Strawberry. That's right. Straw was on the Giants by this point. His career basically teetering on the brink after his Dodgers implosion of the drugs. Strawberry walked twice. He must have been greeted by a lot of boos. Royce Clayton. Kurt Mallory, John Burkett. I remember him. I remember him. Yeah. Let's look at the Mets. Jose Vizcaíno, yeah. Same guy that did it in the Mets when he was with the Yankees years later. Or was it Luis Sol? I think it was Father Orr. Todd Hundley. Before he got moved to left field, one of those just dumb Mets experiments. Like they did the same thing to Howard Johnson. This is stupid. Jeremy Burnett, Jeff Clark Kent, who hit a home run for the Mets, his 14th. They weren't that patient. They traded, but they traded him to the Indians. That was their Roberto Alomar deal, and he didn't do so good. Rico Brugna used to come up to that. Rico Suave music, that little hit or whatever. Yeah, the Mets weren't too good. Rich Montagnoli was coming out of the Giants bullpen. Holy crap, Brock Beck was pretty damn good at that point. So there we go, a little trip down memory lane, back to 1994. Before there was no more baseball that year. So Matt Williams froze at 43 home runs. And we never got to find out if he could have maybe
challenge Roger Maris, well, he probably would have fallen short. Probably, the pressure probably would have been too much, but it would have been interesting. Or maybe it would have been Barry Bonds challenging. Or maybe Albert Bell, Frank Thomas, or Ken Griffey Jr. Guess we'll never know. I don't remember too much more about it, but okay. So, talked a lot of baseball. I talked more basketball, social justice than I wanted to, hockey. I didn't really get to. NASCAR, I'm just going to just go through this quick because it's a short show. I did actually take a look at the last maybe 40 laps of the race at Homestead Miami Speedway, a race won by Denny Hamlin. So Denny Hamlin won the race. I think Madison Miller nailed that prediction. She said that Denny Hamlin had a bad run the week before, and she expected him to come to have a comeback and do well. Well, looks like she was right about that. So very interesting. That was the Dixie Vodka 400, actually. And Denny Hamlin was able to hold off Chase Elliott. Hamlin was able to go by him, have a little help from Blaney. And he led for the last maybe 28 or 29 laps and held him off to get the win. So the veteran, 39-year-old, beating out the 24-year-old kid, number 11 for the Toyota, and Elliott with number 9. And they were basically, I'll tell you, one thing I remember watching racing, and this for this because I don't really watch too much racing, how hard it is for a driver, when you're going against the guy that has the lead, to pass that guy in front. Because there were a couple of moments where Elliott put the pressure, he applied the pressure to Hamlin, but Hamlin just kept pulling back away on a certain turn. So, and that's something I remember when I used to watch racing. So, congratulations to Denny Hamlin on his victory. There's obviously will be more races coming up probably. We got more races coming up. So, but that was the latest one. So that one on Sunday was the latest race, and he got the victory. And in the NASCAR. And we had a good race. So I don't know how they do it. I think the most complicated thing about racing is the whole where they have to stop at pit row. You have to have like really good teams. This is something else that I've noticed about racing. When you go over to make those changes, these guys are just total pros. They do everything just in blitz fashion, the tires, et cetera, and they get you back out. I never understood how that works. Maybe if I watch more, I'll actually understand it. So, good job there. A little final segment here. Throwback hockey. We're still waiting for hockey, and we're still going to be waiting a while. So, you're counting down to the first part of that draft that I mentioned. And you got to wait for whichever teams get eliminated for the second part. It's a couple weeks away, actually. It's only 10 days away. June 26th, yeah. So, and you still got to wait a little while for those training camps to really get going. You know that Vegas is one of the hub sites that's going to be the host to all the Eastern Conference playoffs, and that makes the most sense. You don't want to have Western Conference teams playing out in Vegas. That wouldn't make any sense. So you got the Rangers and the Hurricanes. You got the Islanders and the Panthers. And you got other teams like Montreal and Pittsburgh and Columbus and Toronto. They're going to be playing out there. And there will be those round robins for the seeds. I'm pretty sure that Boston will wind up number one. After that, I don't know what will look like. I still have to figure out what the other hub is going to be for the West. So we'll see what happens there. But they have been showing some classic games. That they're always putting classic games on when it's on MSG. I've stopped watching pretty much. Like the NHL Network did have the they had the Mario Lemieux game on where he scored the five goals. The five goals. I think it was like maybe his second or third game back from Hodgkin's disease, where he gets five goals in 93. April, yeah, it was like might have been one of the final games. It might have been the final game of the year at MSG. Under Rod Smith or whatever, so it was just in over his head. Performance, historic performance by Mario. Penguins beat the Rangers, just awful. They beat them like a rented mule. That's what the legendary announcer would say. And they won like 10-3 or 10-4, so. So they had that on. I think they were about to show Gretzky's 500th career goal. So you do have some classic hockey. You know, what do I remember about classic hockey? Games like that. Just how different it was. It's a lot more wide open. There's more places to shoot on goalies. Goalies don't have, they didn't have the big equipment. It makes it so easy for them to cheat, basically. And take up so much of the net. I think they have too much equipment. That's my personal opinion. I don't know how Henrik Lundqvist would have done having smaller equipment. He wouldn't have been able to sit back in the net. Would have had to play like Hasek. Yeah, I mean, or Richter, or Brodeur. But yeah, goalies had to play the angles more, and there was more room, obviously, to shoot at. Guys could fly down the wing and fire that slap shot and see if they could pick it. So, tell you what else I remember, just how tough the game was. You had your enforcers, you had your fights. I mean, there's a lot of crazy stuff back then, so it was just very different. I liked that game a lot better, to be honest. I know, there was more clutching and grabbing, and there's a lot of tugging. It was hockey. It was a tough game. I think that it's too artificialized now. That's just how I feel. Really, you score a goal in overtime, 3-on-3, it's so artificialized. There should be an asterisk next to those goals. It's just a lot easier to score 3-on-3. Really. I mean, overtime, everybody gets a point, and you're playing just for one, and you got shootouts. It's just a lot different, you know. Back then, if you went to overtime, it could be one of three things could happen to you. You could tie, so each team would get a point after 5 minutes. You could win the game outright and get 2 points, and if you lost, guess what? You got none. You got nothing. There were no such thing as regulation ties or regulation whatever you want to call it. That stupid fourth column that they put. That was one of the dumbest things that the NHL ever did. It's just different. It's a different time. I don't know. I mean, there's certain things I like about the game now, and there's certain things I don't like about it. I don't think the goalies should be so restricted where they could play the puck. The Brodeur rule, I think that needs to be taken back out. Sideline defensemen aren't going to hammer. You don't want as much neutral zone play. I understand all that. I'm glad they brought the tag up rule back. But they thicken the blue lines, and it makes it almost impossible to get it out. You got the icings. You got power play starting automatically in the offensive zone. There's just a lot of stuff that I don't agree with. That's going to do for this live portion. I'm just going to do about 5 minutes of overtime. Tune in to our next podcast. Anywhere. Download it. We're available. Apple, wherever podcasts are available on Apple or iTunes, etc. All right. This is Overtime. It's Derek Felix here. I pretty much ran through. I really ran through the last few segments because I was running late because I decided to talk a little bit about the social justice crap. I don't really want to do that anymore. It seems like I have to. I don't know. It just seems like I have to, so. Three, in case you didn't realize it, three cops were poisoned at a Shake Shack tonight in New York. How nice. How nice. What a great thing to do. I mean, really. I mean, this is what you have now. Cops just aren't safe. They can't even go to a restaurant and get food without being poisoned, without their lives being at risk from food poisoning. How ridiculous is that? It's crazy. I can only point the finger at one person, the same person that, wants to get rid of, decided no more undercover cops where they can wear plain clothes where they're on operations. So that's just brilliant. That's brilliant. I mean, really, this city is falling apart and it's going to get worse. So, but Joe Biden's going to fix everything when he gets elected. That's a foregone conclusion now. They will get Trump out. And I'm not a Trump guy anymore. He just is not a leader, and he should be more out in front, and he's just too. I think he did some good things. I do when it comes to the foreign policy, but with the economy before all this stuff happened. But he's not a president. People think that Obama was some great president. He wasn't a great president. That was a childish argument with some former coworker, and he started calling me names. So that's the Democratic mentality now. The party of tolerance become the party of intolerance. It's not pretty. I mean, I supported the Democratic Party for a long time, and it's not the same party I grew up on, so it's pretty sad. And I'm not a Republican. Also, I'm an independent. And you started bringing up Trump. How come you don't bring up Trump? But that wasn't the topic. I just said that I just didn't agree that he was some great president. Barack. I think Barack's first term was okay, and he accomplished a lot. Second term was not that good. The Affordable Health Care Act turned out to be a lie because it just put more money in insurance companies' pockets and screwed people over, like myself, who have mental illness and thought they were covered for the rest of the year on Medicaid and had to pay out of pocket. Enough to pay for meds out of pocket at least 2 or 3 different times. So it is not good. And they were charging money for some people who weren't on plans for late fees. That's not so good. I think it helped a lot of older people. I will say that. So helping the older people with health care, that was a good. That's a positive. But I just don't think that he. I don't think his Mr. Obama and whoever else was involved in the bill. I don't think they thought the whole thing through. So that meant that a lot of people lost. Didn't get it. They had to find new insurance companies, and they had to lose their insurance plans. And some companies started taking shortcuts to limit the hours so they wouldn't have to give out health care. That's not so great. I mean, they didn't think everything through. So I call it the Unaffordable Care Act, because unaffordable for families. Before, if I had a family, it would be very unaffordable. And because of my anxiety, I've been out of work, and I've been getting Medicaid. I qualify for the Medicaid. I'm okay. I'm getting things for free. Once I'm okay and I start feeling better and I get back to work, guess what? I have to go back on a real plan. I have to pay out of pocket, just like everybody else. So, and you know what? I won't mind paying out of pocket. I just hope it's not going to cost an arm and a leg. That's all. That's all. Because I do have panic disorder. And it's not easy. It's not easy. I've been struggling lately, and I just got to get better. So, yeah, I'm gonna wrap this baby up in a second. I think I might have added some new songs, so maybe I'll debut one of them for y'all before we get going. I do see a couple of songs here from another band that I love. Let's go with the shorter one. This is by INXS, and it's called Disappear from 1989. Great song.
Commentary and Excess. One of my brother's favorite groups from the late '80s, early in the '90s, of course. Michael Hutchins, the great voice. Boy, she was still around, huh? He took his own life by hanging a long time ago. God, they used to turn out some great music. Disappear, being one of them. Mystify, that's another one. Also, what do I have on here? Devil Inside. I think Disappear is a good song for how things are right now. When it comes to baseball, when it comes to the city, what's going on in Manhattan, especially with the police, with what they're trying to do, makes you want to disappear. So, yeah, I mean, I'm able to, I'm very poetic, I'm able to just throw things out there like that. And it is Derek Felix here on the Hard Hits abbreviated overnight show. Stand for a few more minutes. I loved In Excess. Here's the thing about In Excess. There are some groups. There are some groups that you don't realize how good they were until you do. And then you start to realize. And my brother loved them. That album, Kick, oh, that's a great album. Australian group that formed in 1977. Never Tear Us Apart is a great song. Need You Tonight. They have so many great songs. They just were excellent. I mean, they really were. And when you have a great lead singer too, it really helps. But they had a unique sound, and like, I know how this is going to sound. Like, if you ask me a choice, who would I rather see? AC/DC with their great rock and roll show, and well, they are great. They are great. They're still around. Or In Excess. I'll take In Excess. Maybe it's just me. AC/DC is great and everything. They're hard rock and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. It's just something about In Excess to me is just, I love them. I don't know. They have a different sound. And maybe they're not as loud. There's just a uniqueness to them. I wish there wasn't so much tragedy in the music. I really do. New Sensations, number one. I wish there wasn't so much tragedy when it comes to singers. Talked about this before. Hutchins, 1997, November 22nd. Only age 37. Man. So much more out there. He was depressed. Mental health. Chris Cornell. Chester Bennington. There's so many. There's so much tragedy with just great musicians. So Stevie Ray Vaughan. So was that a plane accident? Richie Valens and Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper. Everybody knows about that. Jimi Hendrix. Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison. You could get to the crux of it. Amy Winehouse. Pretty much naming a lot of the 27 clubs. So, yeah, it's just, I don't know what it is about music. Well, I mean, they do live excessively. I mean, their lifestyles are a lot different. It's like when an athlete kind of loses it or whatever, and they go from being a star, a guy that was going to be a Hall of Famer, and maybe who knows how many games Dwight Gooden could have won. Maybe he could have won 250. Maybe he could have won 300 games. I don't know. How many strikeouts could he have won? A lot more than one. How many could he have ever been a 300 strikeout guy? Yeah, I would say so. Carol Strawberry, how many home runs would he have hit? He would have been a lock for 500. Could he have hit 600? Who knows? How many home runs would he have hit? There was no better player to watch, a better slugger to watch than Darryl when he came up to the plate. He didn't want to miss an at bat. So, the fact that I got to see Darryl play for the Yankees and he had 3 home runs at a game in 96 against the White Sox, that was pretty crazy. I was, what, 19 at the time? Yeah. During that summer, that was great. And I saw Dwight Gooden pitch in the World Roll no hitter, and it was for the Yankees. It's the Mariners, both teams. Gerald Williams, Robin, A-Rod, of like what would have been a double or triple early in the game, so maybe second inning. Wow. It makes you think, though. It makes you wonder. At least both Darryl and Doc and Darryl are still alive, and Darryl has done very well for himself. Doc, I just hope he's doing okay. That's all I can say. It's rehab so many different times. It's crazy. Yeah, but you know what it is about fortune and fame. It's just, it's crazy. It's crazy. It is. I'm glad that I have some in excess that I can now play. That's part of this podcast, part of the show, whatever you want to call it. Man, I don't know. They were just so different. They were so different. Texas. They had that one song. The one song, what was that called? Mediate or Alleviate? I think it was Mediate. Where, now that's one of the most unique songs that I've ever heard. Because he's just rhyming. He's come up with every different rhyme. And the video they did for it was beautiful. It's not the longest song. It's maybe about 3:14, I think. And hallucinate, mediate, desegregate. He has like signs with the words, and it's the way they did it. Mediate, yeah, it was mediate. It's beautiful. I don't know. It's just like, who would think to play a song like that, create a song like that? We all rotate. It's just beautiful. I don't know. There's some, the way they play it, and I think you got a little bit of like, I don't know if it's like a trumpet or something, or there's something in there that they play near the end of it. That's just, or a sax. It might be, it's probably a saxophone. It's just, wow. I don't know. It takes your breath away. It's just, it's like, they were such a forward-thinking group. I wish there were more groups that just were outside the box, but do things like that. You know, there are plenty of groups that, you know, have that to them, but there's something about them. You know, maybe there's something about that video. Because every time I watch that video, and I'm going to watch it when I finally finish this show, and I just hit end or whatever, I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to go to sleep, and I'm going to be like, wow, that was genius. It's like, I've been on this Jerry Lee Lewis kick lately, ever since last week, and it wasn't perfect, obviously. No. But in terms of how he performed, and his interviews, and what he says, I just like the fact that it's no BS, and he's just, he was such a great performer, what can I say? It's the unique artists, right? The unique artists that always have the appeal. He's got the appeal. Hallucinate, desegregate, mediate, alleviate, try not to hate. Love your mate, don't suffocate on your own hate. Designate your love as fate, a one world state as human freight. Number 8. This is less than a 3. Yeah, it's not a long song. There's a really good message in the song. So, I just wish that this actually was made in 87. I didn't even realize that. Wow. So this was one of their early hits. But they were around in the 80s. I think the world of it. I think it's great. there was a lot of genius involved, even though it's very simple and very simplistic in the way they did it. And it's just so well executed. So, and I just feel like, you know what? I like that. I like stuff like that that just got that kick. It's got kick was the name of the album, right? But, like, I just like the way it was executed. And if you could execute anything like that, I mean, it's just like, wow. Freaking awesome. So, yeah. They don't really get enough credit. Oh, great they were. They were a great band. Not saying they were a whole fan band. They could have been. Are they going to put Chris Cornell and Soundgarden in already? In that Rock and Roll Hall of Shame? Or what? Or are they going to put some more rappers in there? I have nothing against rap. I like rap, but it's a little much. When you know, Pat Benatar is not in, and Joe Cocker is not in. And there's just a lot of great artists that haven't been recognized. I don't really understand it at all. I don't get it. They should just rename themselves Music Hall of Fame, because that's what they are. It's not a rock and roll fame. It's a Music Hall of Fame, okay? Because there's so many categories. And the hardcore people are going to say that. So, yeah. That's going to do it for this edition. I will probably be back later tomorrow. Maybe we'll shoot for an afternoon show. And maybe there will actually be some new topics to discuss. That would be nice, wouldn't it? I need to put some Beach Boys in here, too. You know, maybe we will. I don't know. I'm going to end this show with a song because it seems like it's the thing I do now. And there's only one way to end this show. And it's been a hot topic lately. And I still think that flag stands for everything. And I end it with the great Jimi Hendrix. The legendary Jimmy. So make sure you follow me, dflex2123, on the Twitter or wherever. And make sure you, if you didn't listen, you can obviously find, you can download us on iTunes or whatever, wherever podcasts are available. And check out our podcast. All right. Good night, everybody. This is the one and only, the legend himself, Jimi Hendrix, for the message for everybody out there.
Here's a song that we was all brainwashed with. Remember this oldies but goodies?